how about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. He's John Littlefoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
Hey, parents. Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello, Rank Squad, and welcome to Ranks FC for the third time in 3 days as we round off our Euro 2024 previews with Groups E and D. My name is Jack Collins. I'll be your host today, and joining me, as ever, my co-host, Mr. Dean Jones. How you doing, mate?
I'm good, mate. I'm better than Jack Grealish anyway. This is the day that he was left out of the England squad, proving he's Irish after all, not going to the Euros. So, poor old Jack.
The first tournament after Jack Grealish changed his allegiance from Ireland to England, he wasn't selected. I think it was Euro 2016, and Ireland went to that European Championships. And there was a flag that said, it was just a big Ireland flag with the Home Alone logo on it and a picture of Jack Grealish above it. And it's always stuck with me. But it is what it is. He is Irish after all, as you say. Not going to European Championships. Still going to win as much as Jack Grealish this summer. So we've got that to fall back on at the very least.
Yeah, exactly. But that's been happening today. Obviously, the England squad. I also actually bumped into a listener, Jack, about an hour or two ago. I was having a kick about with the boys out in the pitches next to Walton Ersham. And a lad comes over, shouts through the fence, big Ranks FC fan, go Jacob.
Shouts out Jacob.
Yes, top man. Yeah. So, and also I bumped into a lad called Ben at Fulham at the weekend, a picnic on the pitch. It's always weird. I don't know, because it shouldn't be that weird that people are in football environments and listen to the pod, but it still catches you out. But it's nice. And like, so people are always like, oh, sorry for saying hello. It's like, don't be sorry for saying hello.
That's
like,
it's
cool. It's good to know that there are real people actually listening to these pods. So yeah, shouts out to anyone that's come up to us. You've had it a bit too recently, I know.
Yeah, of course.
But mate, before we get started, I have set up a Euro 2024 Ranks FC Fantasy League.
Here we go.
Everyone needs to go get the Euros app, get into the fantasy section. Code is in the description.
Can you do it on the computer?
No idea. Done it on my phone, done it on the app. I assume you can, yeah. It's just on the Euro 2024 site, and they'll have a fantasy. You almost definitely can.
I think also that's maybe the oldest I've ever sounded. Can you do it on the computer?
Yeah, I was like, isn't it me that's supposed to say stuff like that? Like, what are you doing?
I just like doing fantasy football on my laptop. Like, I don't like doing it on my phone because there's too many things to think about. I mean, maybe the reason I'm not very good at it is because I actually overthink absolutely everything rather than just
press auto
sticking the players in. But yeah, no, I do tend to think about these things. So I want to do it in a medium where I have more visual aid to be able to help me out. So I want to do it on the laptop. So,
it's funny. I'd picked my team earlier today, and then I'm watching the Netherlands against Canada in a friendly right now, and Frimpong's already weighed in with a goal and assist, so he's straight in my team.
It's going to be very funny when Dumfries starts ahead of him after you changed it to put him in your team.
I was like, get it. Well, I've only watched the second half, so maybe he came on a sub in the first place. I know, actually, he's literally just going off the pitch now, so he wasn't a sub. But make sure you're tuned to us in terms of getting them in among the fantasy action, mate.
Links in the description. You can click through it. That'll help you out. And we'll have a lot of fun. So we're going to keep it to the podcast listeners. We're not going to be putting this on social media. So this is the only place you'll hear about this link. We're going to be doing fantasy. We'll think about doing a prize for whoever wins. So
yeah, I've got to send a prize actually to the guy that won the Premier League fantasy. He sent me his details and I'm going to send him something.
We've got a Bragg's FC shirt probably hanging around, or a hoodie or something. So that'll go out.
I thought I did, and I don't.
So I do. I have them all.
Oh, do you?
Yeah. So I'll do that. So we're good. Look at this, working things out on air.
First time we've spoken to each other in months.
Yeah, absolutely. He says 3 days, three pods, 3 days. Right. Yeah. So let's get stuck into this because there's loads to get through. Let's get into Group E. And I think the only sensible place to start is with Belgium.
Yeah, Belgium win the group. There you go.
I can't disagree either. It's not even a nonsensical statement.
Not really. No, I mean, look, I'll be honest with you. It's a group that's a little bit difficult to get excited about. Belgium, Ukraine, Romania, and Slovakia. Not the sort of stuff you're going to be writing home about, I don't think. But who knows? There could be a surprise that emerges from this group.
I disagree with you slightly, and just to go off topic again and not let you talk about Belgium, I actually think this could be the best race for second in any group. I think Belgium will win it, as you say.
Niche subjects, the race for second.
No, but I think that in terms of the three teams, you know, aside from Belgium, they're probably the closest in where they are right now. And also, you know, Slovakia and Romania both punching upwards. Ukraine, a lot of pressure on them ahead of this tournament from various different sides for geopolitical reasons, as much as football ones. I think this could be the best race for second in any group. So I'm quite excited about it, to be honest.
Okay. No, that's fair. Belgium just played a friendly against Montenegro, 1-2-0. KDB and Trossard got the goals in that one. Obviously, like, we've come through a time when Belgium had a golden generation when they expected and were talked about potentially winning stuff. The days of Courtois and Hazard and Alderweireld are now gone. And we're looking at a time when Witsel, Lukaku, KDB, Vertonghen probably having their last hurrah at Euros. But not necessarily a bad thing, because I think there's also a blend here now that they've got perhaps more than they did back then. And I think that they've got a reasonably well set team here. They've also certainly haven't got an old manager. They got a modern manager in Tedesco. I think that's definitely a good thing for this group of players. I'll be honest with you, don't know anyone near as much about him as you do, but my layman's man thinking is that he's straight out of the Nagelsmann school of managing, loves data, similar football pathway, and obviously wasn't like a big name footballer or anything like that, but clearly extremely intelligent, and is probably a good manager for this group of players when you've got some emerging and some already proven.
Born in Italy, grew up in Germany, very German school, I think is probably the way I would put it.
yeah, exactly. I do like their attacking potential. There's a lot of pace in this squad, and I think that's going to be a big asset. And they've got, I tell you what, I actually probably like the most actually is their midfield selection. Like, they, even the ones that probably aren't going to play in this tournament, I really like players like Arta Vermeer, and like that they've just got really good technical midfielders. Like, to be honest with you, like, it'll probably be Amadou Onana that ends up being like the most important player in that midfield, because he's going to have such a big job on his hands, it seems like, if he does get the nod, which is expected. But yeah, they've got a really good crop of midfield options. And then in attack, they're strong.
An embarrassment of riches, you might say.
It is, isn't it, really? I mean, I said there that Trossard scored the other day in the friendly. Jeremy Doku, we've just seen at the end of this season how he can be such a game changer, and when
Well, he won the penalty that Trossard scored. So it's one of those ones where Trossard's name's on the score sheet, but it was the fast feet of Doku that really did earn that.
The fast feet of Doku that is the undoing of almost everyone these days. He's so good. And you watch City sometimes, and it's just bang, get it out to him, get it out. So they ignore the right flank sometimes. Like if they're looking for a goal, they need something to happen, FA Cup final, whatever. Like, it's just always Doku's the outlet. And extremely hard to stop him. Going up the levels month by month, it feels like Jeremy Doku at the moment. And I think he'll be extremely exciting. Johan Bakayoko, a player that's being talked about potentially for a transfer as well. A PSV
great
at the
season
moment.
At PSV, 14 goals, 14 assists in 38 games. 48 games.
Yeah, only 21 years old, but extremely exciting player.
Different kind of winger to Doku. I got to say about Belgium, I think they could, look, they won't do this, and also they shouldn't do this because in some ways I don't think it's the kind of thing that wins you a tournament, but they have the potential to be the most like lightning attacking unit you can possibly think of. If they played 4-4-2, then Belgium would be all the fun in the world. Now, I think they'd probably get run through a little bit in the midfield because one of those two would have to be De Bruyne. And then you're thinking, right, can De Bruyne and Amadou Onana knock it down by themselves? Tielemans obviously probably will play in a midfield three with those two. But if they did do that and they played Openda and Lukaku up front, Openda's had a cracking season at Leipzig.
Yeah.
And Bakayoko and Doku on the wings, because Bakayoko is a very different kind of player. Very, very good crosser of the ball, two-footed, make things happen, but not the kind of same one-on-one separation that maybe you get from a Jeremy Doku, but they're very different types. And I think they'd complement each other well. But I think Trossard probably has to start at this point. He's waited for his turn for so long with Eden Hazard being in the side.
Yeah.
But it feels like he will start. But there is something there that I'm like, if Tedesco just went balls to the wall 4-4-2, they could be the most exciting side at the Euros.
Yeah, look, they'll still be exciting. And obviously Lukaku's, it's a big tournament for him. I was speaking to a friend of his the other day, trying to find out, you know, some information on where he might go for his next transfer. And, you know, the links to Napoli are legitimate. I know Mourinho's played down the Fenerbahce thing, but he does want Lukaku at Fenerbahce. AC Milan did have a sniff. But he said, look, another move could yet open up. Ron wants to absolutely eat up this tournament. He's hungry for this. And I was like, ooh, I like a hungry Lukaku. Like I want to see him feeding on some crosses from these lads that he's going to have feeding him. And so Belgium, they really could be tasty. I've talked a lot across this series, obviously, about fixtures, and the fact that Belgium's first game is against Slovakia is probably quite a nice way for them to get up and running. I talked about fantasy at the start of the show. There's definitely a couple of Belgian players that I'm thinking are going to be worth having from that perspective when you're looking at that game. And they've got a couple of leaders in there too. I guess like when it comes to key men, I said there, I think Onana will be key. And it's a big summer for him as well because he could end up earning a big transfer as well as Lukaku. But like, what are we getting from KDB at this tournament? Like as City this season, there's been some disappointing performances. There's been a couple of like elite old school De Bruyne performances, but he definitely doesn't seem on the same consistent levels that he once was. Obviously he's had injuries, so it's acceptable.
His numbers when he plays have still been absolutely ridiculous.
His numbers are still good. He's 32, probably coming into his last year at Man City, and almost certainly to be his last Euros. So what are we going to get from De Bruyne? Considering he's in a group with Slovakia, Romania and Ukraine, I think quite a lot. I'm excited about De Bruyne in this tournament. I want to see him roll it back a bit. I'll be honest with you, I'm slightly concerned that this is a team that has the potential to crash and burn. But what's expected of them is that they go and win the group. So I'm going to go with that. But there's a part of me, when I'm doing the research on this, I'm like, do I trust them? Not really, but it looks like it could be great. So I want to go with that.
Yeah.
So I'm going with that.
I get it. I think there's been a lot made about the Courtois thing, and I'm not hugely worried about that. I think Koen Casteels is a wonderful goalkeeper and will be absolutely fine. as the number one for Belgium in this tournament. Okay, he's not Courtois, and that is going to be something that comes up. Matt Sells is not going to be playing. He's going to be Cohen Castells. He's already come out to Tedesco and said he's my number one. So that's good to know. But the defense is one of those where there's a lot of players who I'm like, these are talented footballers, but I'm not 100% sure how it's all going to come together. But Arteta's someone who I've really liked since his Bologna days, who went to Rennes and has done okay there, and everyone's having a nice time in terms of where that is at. But I think when you're kind of looking at that, Castagne's had an excellent season for Fulham at right back. He's probably going to have to play left back here. Vertonghen is 37 now. Yes, still kicking along at Anderlecht, but whether he is used as kind of someone to stay in the kind of background a little bit more and guide this team, or whether he's actually still starting, I think it's probably still up in the air. And then there's Maxime de Kuyper, who I really like at right back. And I think he's had a really, really good season with Club Brugge, but he has only made one cap for the Belgian national team. So to throw him in for his second cap at the opening game of the Euros would be pretty wild. So it's one of those where Thomas Meunier is 32 now. He's been at Trabzonspor this season, or he joined in January. He's done okay. He's done all right. He's made 14 or so appearances. He's been all right. But is he still the player that he once was? Questionable, I think, is probably the answer to that. Like you say, there's a good mix of experience and young talent in this squad. I'm just not sure it's in all the right areas. Now, there's a couple of players here I'm like, you could have probably just done with a 32-year-old Jan Vertonghen guiding you through, you know, Arteta, Wout Fyst, Zinho de Bast, who I think is a wonderful young centre-back and is going to be on the radar of big clubs very soon. Kind of just want someone to be able to guide that a little bit more. Yeah. And I'm not sure Vertonghen on the pitch is going to be pulling that off right now.
Yeah, no, I did have, I don't know if I remember saying it there, but there's a little thing, one note I've got just says worry, arrow, defence. Yeah. And yeah, there is some concern around that for sure. I've got to say, like, doing these shows, by the way, I go very old school. It's like I'm revising for exams back in like 2002 or something. They're all written on, like, I've just written all my notes out on like envelopes. And the problem is I barely ever write these days, mate, and I can't read my notes. My writing is an absolute disgrace. I should probably post it actually on Instagram. Probably get some good likes for, can anybody read any of these words? It's absolutely horrendous.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, Belgium should be fun. I think they will win the group, but I'm not completely convinced how deep they're going to go at this tournament, I think is probably where I'm at with them. But let's come on to these other teams, because like I say, I do think actually the battle for second might be the most interesting thing happening here. And we'll start with Slovakia, who were really impressive, DJ, in qualification. They won 7 of their 10 matches. They qualified pretty comfortably behind Portugal. They ran Portugal pretty close as well in those games to reach this tournament without too much fuss. It makes it 3 European championships in a row that they've qualified for, which is impressive enough in itself, given that these are their only 3 qualifications since the dissolution of Czechoslovakia in 1993. Now, I mean, I suppose if you're looking at Slovakia, you could be like, well, they actually won this tournament as Czechoslovakia, but since the two countries split into Czechia and Slovakia, they haven't had loads to shout about in a football sense. But these 3 qualifications in a row are starting to move things along, I think, in terms of where expectations are at. But anyone who's been keeping an eye on Serie A will know their manager well, because he's been overseeing Napoli for the last couple of months. He was previously an assistant under Luciano Spalletti, Francesco Carzona. He was brought back by De Laurentiis in February to try and steady the ship until the end of the season. He didn't really. He won 3 of the 16 games between his appointment and the end of the season. But he did this on the condition that he could stay in the Slovakia job. And given that it wasn't great, I think it would be harsh to lay that solely at his door, considering what we saw at Napoli before he came in. He at least seemed to turn the mood and the morale around in the camp a little bit, which is something to cling on to. Plays a 4-3-3, looks sometimes a little bit more like a 4-1-4-1. Slovakia are pretty calm and collected on the ball. They're quite possession heavy and have been during Calzona's tenure, which is not something you'd normally associate with a side lower down in the European rankings. They're under 40th in the European rankings. So it's quite a weird one, but they're good on the ball and they like to slow things down to kind of maintain control of the game. And there's some really talented players in here. I mean, my key player I've picked out is David Hanko, not just because he's an old friend of this podcast.
But he listens.
It's been great to watch someone that we interviewed as a fringe player at Fiorentina rise to become one of the best players at Feyenoord, take the captain's armband, now linked with some of the biggest clubs in the game, and you'll know that better than me, but the links seeing him obviously with Liverpool and Arne Slot might be a little bit far-fetched perhaps, but I think that the interest from Napoli, the interest from other Premier League clubs is probably not, considering what we've seen from him. He plays as a centre-back for Feyenoord, but I expect him to be deployed as a left-back here, mostly because Milan Skriniar plays as the left centre-back in this Slovakia team. But that does give him a bit more room to join in with the offensive phases of the game. He's really tidy on the ball. He's got great progressive passing range and he's comfortable defending one-on-one. I think that he's risen to become one of Slovakia's more important players really quite quickly. Alongside Skriniar on that left-hand side with Martin Dubravka behind them and protected on the left of that midfield by Stanislav Lobotka, who plays obviously for Napoli, and Hellas Verona's Andre Duda, who's had another good campaign. I think that's a pretty formidable side of the pitch for players to get at. And you kind of look further onwards and you're going, okay, well, where's that? And Lukas Hrašlin, who's been brilliant for Prague, has been sensational for Spartak Prague. He has had a really good couple of campaigns. He's lit up a couple of Europa League, Europa Conference League games in his time. And I think when you kind of look at all of this together, there's the opportunity here for teams to look at this and be like, wow, that left-hand side of this Slovakia team is actually very, very talented. Now, the right probably doesn't stack up quite as well. But actually, in terms of where the progression is going to come from, in terms of where they're going to look to build, you look at those players and you think, wow, that's a very, very talented unit who have all been playing and plying their trade in pretty high level. I'm quite excited about seeing how that kind of plays out. Just one to watch, though, as well. The centre forward will be Robert Brzezinic, who I've watched a lot this season because he plays for Boavista. He had a move to Sevilla in January that fell through at the last minute. And basically, Boavista are stone broke. So they're going to have to sell this summer. The club are, you know, on the verge of financial collapse. It's really incredibly sad to see, to be perfectly honest with you. But I think that he is one of the most saleable assets and there is going to be interest in him this summer. Now, since that move fell through, he hasn't been quite as good. It's, you know, it really seems to have affected him in terms of where he was at in the second half of this season. But I think now this tournament offers an opportunity for him to be able to put himself on that stage again and be like, oh, by the way, and, you know, considering that Boavista accepted an offer in January, you would expect them to accept a similar offer or something, you know, in that kind of region in June, considering the financial situation hasn't hugely changed. So he has an opportunity here to showcase himself on the highest stage. He's not a particularly creative footballer. And I think he has struggled a little bit at Boavista in the second half of the season in particular, because there haven't been much of a kind of feed for him. And he has been quite isolated given the way that the team have had to set up to try and avoid relegation. But with a little bit more creativity around him, and I think there is in this Slovakia side, he's a brilliant penalty box poacher. He's got an incredibly good work rate. And I think that if he gets the opportunities in and around the penalty area, he will put chances away. So I would say a good tournament that would increase his profile as a target. And I think that a clean slate away from all of the kind of madness that's been going on, you know, at Boavista probably gives him an opportunity to really kind of clear his head and just shine on this stage. So I'm excited to see what he can do.
I feel bad. I've got him at fourth. And then you just literally talked him up.
Well, this is why I'm interested, because like you might stick there considering what I've got to say about Romania, but I want to hear what you have to say about Ukraine first.
Well, the thing with Ukraine is there's a lot of sentiment involved for all of us, and we all kind of want them to be our second team that we're going to be cheering on at this tournament, obviously, with everything that the Ukraine have been through as a nation in recent years. It's really just incredible that they're even at this tournament, to be honest with you. They're obviously not brilliant. They came third in qualifying, then had to go through the playoffs and had to, well, they're really in a game against Bosnia to get through the semi-final. And then in Iceland, it took a late goal to actually clinch it. So it's pretty unconvincing path to actually get here. But considering all the other circumstances they were in, like, it's yeah, an incredible story and like amazing that they've even done it. So it's a very hard situation to read. I mean, their boss is Sergei Rebrov, who was a great player in his heyday and has actually a good track record in management in Ukraine, Hungary, and the UAE. What I do, mate, they've got some really good talent in this team. So you've got Lunin in goal, who's just had a great season at Real Madrid. Okay, defensively, like the two names that most people will know are Zabanyi from Bournemouth, and obviously Mykolenko at Everton. They're the two that you'll know. Zinchenko, and he said Zubimendi then. Zinchenko plays in midfield for Ukraine.
Important tournament for him. Really important tournament for him, not just as sort of one of the leadership group of this team, but also we're talking about, and you've been talking about, the fact that Arsenal are potentially open to selling Oleksandr Zinchenko. And I think that when we saw him get absolutely rinsed at fullback against Aston Villa by Leon Bailey in that game that really kind of put Arsenal on the back foot again in the title race, it did feel like you're like, oh, maybe his future isn't there. But him playing on the left side of this midfield, either in a double pivot or in a three, I think is interesting because, one, it potentially increases his saleable value as a midfielder. But two, might, and I say might because now Arteta's been quite clear about what he sees Zinchenko as, but might become a viable option for Arsenal in that midfield again.
The thing I find remarkable about Zinchenko, and I couldn't believe this, is he's 27.
Yeah, I mean, he's been around for ages.
I would have had him at like 31.
Oh, wow. No. I think that's probably about right. He was young when he broke through, man.
Yeah, but I just can't believe he's still 27. Like, I feel like he's in the last stages of his career.
Who was aging quickly yesterday? Someone was aging quickly yesterday. Zinchenko's aging slowly. It's good to know we've got these ranks classics back in the bag.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just surprised because I feel like you say, he gets exposed at left back, or he's not doing it at Arsenal. But he's brilliant technically, and he's so adaptable. Arsenal should be like embracing Zinchenko. Anyway, we're going to talk about Arsenal. What I like as well, like around those players that I've talked about, obviously not particularly exciting, but there are some very exciting players in this team. Mudryk, you probably see a different version than the one you've seen at Chelsea most of the time. So that's something to look forward to for Chelsea fans. This could be actually a platform for him to go on and have a good season for you next year. One of my favourite players is Sudakov, who plays for Shakhtar Donetsk. Like, he's so good.
Really
he's
talented.
So good.
Really talented.
Like, Arsenal actually had an eye on this guy a while back, because when I first started looking into him, I was told that they'd been scouting him, and I started digging around him and stuff. And he's described a lot of places being, he's always one step ahead. He's just like got such good vision. And he's somebody you're just going to enjoy watching. So Sudakov is somebody that I think will have a good tournament. And around him too, you've got Shankov, who's been at Girona, obviously. He's been linked with Arsenal as well, actually, in the last week.
And they've made an approach for him, from what I've been hearing, which is going to be interesting. So
I mean, that one came really out of the blue. I even asked someone at Arsenal and they were like, I don't know. I don't know a lot about that guy. And I was like, okay. But a good player. And my favourite player, Dovbyk. Artem Dovbyk, mate.
What's a number nine?
They've got literally one of the best number nines in Europe. Like, he's just coming off of an incredible season in La Liga. And he's got people with genuine quality feeding him here, like he's had all season at Girona. Might be a little bit different in terms of the way he's getting the ball. I don't think it's going to be the same style of football, but I'm excited for what Dovbyk could do
at
this competition.
That partnership between him and Shankov, we talked about Mitrovic and Milinkovic-Savic yesterday, and we were talking about that in the Saudi League and being like, how it translates into this tournament is massive for Serbia. These two have been doing this at such a high level this year that Girona are now a Champions League team. And it has been those two linking up. Yes, there have been other players involved. It's not just them. But those two and their connection has been a massive part of why this Girona season has been so successful. And I think when you look at that, as that attacking four, Mudryk, with more space to run into, with a little bit less kind of technical defences in front of him, in that international sides are just not as well drilled as Premier League sides are defensively and naturally, because they don't get the same amount of time together. So Mudryk, as space opens up, incredibly explosive. That link up between Shankov and Dovbyk, as you say, incredible. Sudakov's been excellent for Shakhtar Donetsk and scored some very, very important goals, I think, in the Champions League this year. And then you kind of come on to where they're at and you're like, ooh, that's a nice balance. I think Matvienko and Zabani is a really nice partnership at the back. You spoke about Lunin already. Mikhailenko is very solid, a left back. It depends who plays alongside Zinchenko, but you know, I think that Brazko is someone who's coming through and is quite exciting. And then you've got someone like Malinovsky, who we haven't even mentioned yet, potentially coming off the bench because Sudakov's been that good that you can't displace him in the 10. That's an incredibly healthy setup, I think, from a Ukrainian perspective.
Yeah, and obviously they've also got this blend that, you know, they've always got Dynamo Kiev players and Shakhtar players who are, obviously they all know each other so well and the systems that they come through. But on top of that, now you've got that edge of European now, so where the lads are at Girona or at Arsenal or at Chelsea, and picking up extra insight on opponents, but also taking their game to another level. And that is going to help Ukraine too. So, look, I don't think it will all go their way at this tournament. It's a good group for them to be in, because they've, you know, there's some other groups in here where I wouldn't have given a hope in hell of getting out of it, to be honest with you, because I don't think they're a spectacular team. But in this group, they've definitely got potential.
They should be finishing second. In terms of talent on the pitch, they should be finishing second. I think the question becomes, how much is the emotional burden start to weigh on them? Because there's a lot of that right now.
Oh,
we'll see. We will see. Let's talk about Romania, because I think that you'd have found, or you'd have been hard pressed to find many who would have predicted such a brilliant qualification campaign from Romania, a side that have qualified for only two tournaments since the year 2000 and who haven't made it past the group stage in either of those tournaments. But they went unbeaten through 10 games. They won 6, drew 4. They finished top of the pile ahead of Switzerland. Edward Iordanescu, who is the manager, goes with a defensively stingy 4-5-1 formation. And he's brought through a load of youngsters. That desire to integrate this youthful element has really paid dividends. They conceded just 5 times in those 10 games. And that's really the bedrock, I think, of their success. Defensively, this side are incredibly hard to break down. They have 2 out-and-out defensive midfielders. They have hard-working wingers on either side who track back and help their fullbacks out. It means they're hardly prolific, and they often leave just talisman Nikolai Stanciu and forward George Puskas in attacking positions. But it's worked wonders. And given that many might see them as the weakest team in this group, now, whether that's justified or not is probably up for debate, but I think that, you know, a Belgium, for example, or a Ukraine will probably fancy their chances of beating both Slovakia and Romania, it might just be the thing that gives them an edge over Slovakia. They are so used to sitting deep, hitting quickly on the counter, playing in transition, and they've been very, very good at it over the course of this qualification campaign. It's not a front-footed press by any stretch of the imagination. It's a side who are happy to sit in that low block, win the ball back deep before trying to spring. But off the ball, they're incredibly well-organized and they're incredibly well-disciplined. They'll fancy this group, Dean. Ukraine are probably a more talented side, as we've just discussed, but they come in with a lot of expectation on them. Slovakia will be seen as a level competitor. And as I said at the top, I think the battle for second spot in this group could be a real one to watch. It's probably as tight as anywhere else. But for me, there's a couple of players just to mention. Horatio Moldovan might end up being their key player now. A lot of people won't have heard of him. He's Atletico Madrid's second choice goalkeeper. They signed him in January to replace Ivo Gerbic, who went off to Sheffield United. I think he's a potential long-term heir for Jan Oblak, who has already been touted about moves to Saudi Arabia, et cetera, et cetera. He's a late bloomer, came through at Rapid Bucharest in the second tier. They were promoted. He's firmly risen to the heights in his homeland. Phenomenal shot stopper, incredible reflexes, and a really nicely balanced all-round game, I think. There was a big part of how they qualified for this tournament, already spoken about that defensive record. He's not the biggest of goalkeepers, but he has the capacity to come out and command his box when he's needed, and he is fearless. Fearless when it comes out to coming out and claiming the ball and when it comes to commanding his area. He has a real confidence and a belief in his own game that I think has stemmed from bouncing around, people kind of rejecting him early on in his career and having to work his way up from the second division in Romania through to the fact that he is now at Atletico Madrid. Now, he hasn't started a game yet, and it's probably worth mentioning that. But I think that there's a reason that Betis were interested, that Celtic were interested before Atleti ended up being the ones to sign him in January. I think this could be a number two that grows into a number one job. And he has the ability to showcase here just what he's about. And look, whilst they've been defensively very good, again, they are still one of the weaker sides in this group. They will have to face up to the fact that chances will be conceded against them. They're going to need him to step up. He's got a real opportunity, I think, to showcase just what he's about here.
Yeah, well, he's got a big job on his hands, literally. I'm still going to have to...
Oh, no, well, I've got one more to mention before you make that. I mean, oh, it's not going to change your decision, but one to watch, Yanis Hadji. Now, burdened with the glorious name of his father, Georgie, raises plenty of nostalgic memories, I think, for football fans of a certain vintage. Hadji will be familiar to watch the Scottish football because he's still on the books at Rangers, although he spent the last season on loan at Alaves in Spain. Played 22 times as Alaves kind of defied expectations. They only were promoted back to La Liga last year. They ended up finishing 10th. Really, really impressive campaign. One of those that's probably gone under the radar given the storylines that have gone elsewhere. But Alaves were really, really good. Hadji's a clever player. He's blessed with a similar stature and a similar trickery, I think, to his father. But whilst he hasn't hit the same heights by any metric just yet, there's still a lot of space, I think, for him to grow. He's good with both feet. He's capable of going inside and outside from the right flank. That might bring back some memories where I think he'll operate. He's still more of a creator than a goal scorer, but his ball-carrying ability is going to be so crucial for Romania's ability to play in transition and carry the ball out of the back, spring from that kind of deeper baseline. He's made it quite clear that he doesn't want to return to Ibrox this summer. And he's asked, apparently, his agents to find the right club and manager for him next to really start to shine again. So I think an impressive showing with the eyes of the world upon him and that name on his back might just do him a little bit of good in terms of finding his next home. So just want to keep an eye on.
Oh, so much sentiment here again from you. Yeah, let me see. One, Belgium. Two, Ukraine. Three, Slovakia. Four, Romania.
I just don't know. I just don't know. I really don't.
It's a complete guess, isn't it?
It's like, I think the way that those three finish at the bottom could be anyone's guess. And you know what? If Belgium has
three at the bottom.
Exactly. Three of the four. Yeah. But yeah, you said Belgium have the capacity to implode as well. And they were hardly set the world on fire at the last World Cup, did they? And there's a lot of kind of change over there. They should win the group. But if they were to not win their first game, this one gets wide open real quick. It could be very, very interesting.
Yeah, very good, mate.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. It's John LeFoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
Hey parents, Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Right, let's move on to the final group, Dean. Group F. Who are you going to start us off with?
I'm going to start with Turkey. They could win the group, but they won't. this is quite a cool team, right? This is quite a special...
It is a cool team, you're right.
...tournament for them because they've actually got a cool team. You never really know what you're going to get from Turkey historically.
I'm so burned by calling them dark horses after the last tournament that I feel really sad about everything.
Yeah, just accept that they're there and don't predict too much, but know that anything is possible. In 2008, they got to a semi-final. Since then, they've gone through stages where they didn't qualify, got knocked out in the groups. So we just don't really know. And obviously, you know, it can get all a bit emotional and passionate and fiery, and they can be their own worst enemies. But what's interesting about them is that their manager is an Italian. He's a Fulham legend, in fact, Vincenzo Montella.
Very funny to be like, oh, this team... they're all a bit fiery. Everyone has the capacity to lose their heads. Who should we bring in? An incredibly passionate Italian. That will calm things down.
Well, I'm just wondering if he can at least not be quite as emotional as the Turkish public might be during games.
I watched a lot of Montella in his career. He is an emotional man.
Is he capable of being pragmatic? That's what I'm wondering.
Not from his time at Fiorentina anyway.
No. He needs to be. He's got to be. He's got to have something that keeps everyone a bit level-headed. Because otherwise, it could be a problem for them. And this is a Turkey team that at the last Euros lost every game. So they've really got to step up here. When I'm talking about having a cool team, well, they've got the coolest midfield you could hope for. Çalhanoğlu is probably playing deep, right?
Best six in the world, according to him.
Yeah.
He was a six in my... Yeah. Well, he was right up there this season anyway.
And ahead of him, able to thrive, you've got Arda Güler, Real Madrid, who has obviously started to feel at home at the back end of the season at the Bernabeu, and really will feel already that he... is worthy of all of the plaudits that have come his way.
Real Madrid have apparently already knocked back a loan off of the next season because they wanted him to be on loan. Yeah,
there
absolutely.
Is no way he's going on loan. Obviously, he had an injury at the start of the season, which was a bit of a setback for him when he made that move, but he's overcome it and he's putting some cracking performances already. So you've got Arda Güler, you've got Çalhanoğlu, you've also got Erkan Kocu, who is just a great playmaker at Benfica. He's 23.
Bad season, again, good player.
Yeah, but a good player, and he's a player that has the capability to thrive if used properly inside with them. They've got other options too, but I'd like to see him thrive here up front. Yıldız is an option. You know, he's coming through at Juve. He's got a bit of an edge about him. They've got experience too. Enes Ünal's not going to be available, is he? Got an injury. So. Yeah.
Yusuf Zizici, though, can play there. Been brilliant for Lille for many years.
Yeah, so they've got options. They're just a nice watch. They've got a rawness about them that sometimes just breeds something special. And I think that's what you're hoping for if you're Turkey. Look, they've pulled off a couple of great results recently. They've beaten Germany, they've beaten Croatia, and there is potential.
They also got spanked 6-1 by Austria. That's Turkey.
Yeah, I mean, they're unpredictable, exactly. But at their best, they could be very, very good. But they could also get a hide in. They're in a group here with Georgia, Portugal, and Czech Republic. That's the order of their games. So that first game, Georgia, perfect. Like that's if you lose, I mean, it's not perfect because you're out. but it's a good occasion, especially for those players that I've mentioned. Güler could have a bit of fun in that match too. So yeah, look, I basically just think that this is a fun team. The element of youth, can't wait to see it. they might end up being their worst enemy. This might all completely blow up. That is definitely something that could happen. But if it doesn't, they're going to come second in the group.
Yeah, no, I think that's probably fair. Sally Özcan as well, Borussia Dortmund, good footballer. Yeah. It's quite interesting to see what they do with this defence, because there's some really, really talented footballers in here. Mary Demiral's at Al Ahly now, but was very good in Serie A and still only 26 years old. Zeki Celik's at Roma. Ferdi Kalioglu is one that I'm really intrigued by. He's a player that's sort of played in about 15 different positions. He was born in the Netherlands and played for Nijmegen, I think, growing up. And he's come through at Fenerbahce. He's played sort of on the wings. He's played either fullback role. I think he will be utilized in the fullback roles from this Turkey side. But it's going to be intriguing to see quite how they utilize him here, because they're not blessed with loads at left back, which is where he's played quite a lot for Fener. But it's not necessarily his natural position. And if he was going to play on the right, I think he might have a little bit more of a kind of traditional role, like that kind of old school fullback role where he was able to get up and whip balls into the box. And from left back, he does something slightly different. He drives inside and opens up angles. And that's where he's been really, really useful for Fener. But whether they use him there is going to be intriguing, because Özcan, who plays for Valencia, can play at left back as well, although they might need him at centre back, considering that Ozan Kabak isn't in this squad. So intriguing. There's a lot of talent. They, as you say, can go one or two ways. I'm just sort of waiting to see with Turkey. They should come second in the group. You're right, but whether they will or not is a completely different question.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, let's come on to Portugal, shall we? The vibes are up. Expectations are high. The squad looks as good as any in the competition on paper. Portugal won all 10 games in qualification for this tournament for the first time ever. They scored 36 and they conceded 2.
They're so good.
Roberto Martinez seems to have breathed new life into this squad, which at the end did feel a little bit sort of held back by Fernando Sanchez's approach towards the end of things. My only concern with Portugal is that when they've gone into tournaments as the bracket favourites, they found a way to screw things up. Obviously, 2004 comes to mind, but 2006 and 2012 should probably be in the conversation too. When they won it in 2016, quite a lot of people thought that it was their weakest squad in ages. So football, it just does that. But outside of that, there's so many reasons to be positive about this Portugal side. The formation isn't quite set in stone. Martinez has experimented with a number of different tactical setups in qualification, most of which have worked pretty well. But I think it will be a 4-3-3 because it just makes the most sense. Diogo Costa will start in goal. That's pretty certain at this point. Ruben Dias will be one of the two centre-backs, paired with the seemingly ageless Pepe or the bright young thing, Antonio Silva. Two players at different ends of their careers, but who both offer something quite special, I think, to this team in different ways. On the flanks, I think it will be João Cancelo and Nuno Mendes, but Diogo Dalot's had a brilliant year at Manchester United covering both flanks. And I think that Nelson Semedo has perhaps gone a little bit under the radar whilst impressing at Wolves too. And obviously Cancelo can play both flanks as well, which makes life easier in terms of your selection processes. But it's the midfield depth, right? It's insane. João Palhinha, Ruben Neves, Mateus Nunes, Bruno Fernandes, Bernardo Silva, Vitinha, and João Neves. I don't think even the French selection stands up to that.
No, I think you're probably right, yeah.
I think that's the best midfield selection at the tournament by some distance. It's an absolute goldmine of technical brilliance combined with enough physical presence to make sure that they don't get overrun. And then there's the front line. By my money, Rafael Leao is the only lock to start. He should start on that left flank, but Martinez has to make decisions about how and when he utilizes captain, record goal scorer, and living legend in Portugal, Cristiano Ronaldo, right? Still the man for the big moment, but it is worth noting that the games in these tournaments come thick and fast. And then there's Gonçalo Ramos, who hasn't set the world alight in his first season at PSG, but he's done all right. And he does have 8 goals in 12 appearances for Portugal. So that's some going in itself. There's also Diogo Jota, who can obviously play anywhere across the front line, as can João Félix. Whilst Pedro Neto and Chico Conceição will battle it out, I think, with Bernardo Silva for that right wing spot, if Martinez chooses to use him in that kind of capacity. Look, they're fluid in the build-up, they're dynamic in attack, they're good at creating chances, and they have natural goal scorers in lots of different positions. The semi-finals have to be a minimum expectation, I think. for Portugal, especially if them and France win the groups, they'll avoid each other in the sides of the draw. It's a really nice mix of youth and experience. But truthfully, the majority of the bigger names in this squad are in their prime right now. I think they'll fancy making it 2 European Championships out of 3, if I'm perfectly honest. And I think they are rightly in that bracket with France, with Germany, and with England in terms of where they are and what they should be expecting.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they will be. Roberto Martinez has got a lot of pressure on him as the manager. He had that Belgian crop.
He did take them to third.
Yeah,
I say
he didn't quite get to where they would they dreamt of being, but at one point it wasn't far off. I think they'll be in the last four. They'll be in the last four of this tournament.
They should be in the last four of this tournament. I mean, the way the bracket shakes out is going to be interesting, but if everything goes to plan, there's nothing that should stop Portugal being in the semifinals. From there, anyone's guess.
The way I've shaped up the bracket and the way we've talked about it across this series, it would be that the semifinals are Germany v Portugal and France versus England. Those would be the two semifinals that we would be looking at. And in that situation, I would be predicting a Portugal-France final.
The rerun.
Which would be...
Run it back.
A classic. And it would mean that England come fourth in the tournament because we would lose to Germany in the third, fourth playoff.
Is there a third, fourth playoff?
I don't know. I actually don't think there is.
I think that only happens at World Cup.
Good. I don't want to play in it.
No one wants to play in that game. It's the worst game in football. And just a couple just to touch on. Obviously, Cristiano will have a say, but I do think the key player in this side is Bruno Fernandes. And I think that when you kind of look at how he's played for Portugal, and look, I think he's been pretty good for Manchester United across the course of things and in terms of the way that he's played and the way he stepped up. But I think he becomes a completely different player when he plays for his country. He gets that freedom really to play as an advanced eight, kind of in the 10 role. He has that ability to lightning rod it and make it come through him. And when he gets that shirt on, he seems to just step it up a level. And some of his performances in qualification were absolutely sublime. I think that kind of when you look at when he came on earlier in the week in their friendly, he scored 2 in the second half, second of which was an absolutely glorious curling effort. First of which was a glorious curling effort. And the second one was well worked as well. But he adds something so much to this team. And I think the way that it goes through him is going to be crucial for the way that Portugal play. But I do think that leaves a question mark because I think that João Palhinha is pretty set as the six. Now, he'll rotate potentially with Danilo Pereira or Ruben Neves in terms of how they just work their way through the group stages. But I think when it comes to knockout football, João Palhinha is pretty much a lock in terms of he will start. And then I think that Bruno Fernandes is a lock. Who plays in that other role is kind of up for debate because I'm not sure that the way Portugal want to play really lends itself to the idea of how Bernardo Silva functions on the right wing. I think in this Portugal setup, he's actually better in the middle. But there's a pretty big clamour for Vitinha to start ahead of him, which is pretty remarkable, to be honest. And the fact that they're discussing him as perhaps a better option there is testament to what an incredible rise he's had and what a sterling sophomore season he's had at PSG. I think he's been incredible in Luis Enrique's midfield this year. And I think that there is probably a case for Vitinha to start in terms of a more balanced midfield than Bernardo Silva in that other role to Bruno. So just one to watch there, because if he does get the nod, look, I'd love to be talking about João Neves as well, but everyone's heard me bang on about him for forever and a day. I think he's an incredible footballer. But I do think that in terms of who's going to get more minutes, Vitinha comes in early and makes a very good impression. I think it's going to be very hard to knock him out of the side because of what he offers from that kind of link the midfield trio together and the way that he opens out the game. I think he's a very, very special footballer. And it could be very interesting if he does get an early go from the start and he plays well, if Bernardo can actually work his way back in, or if Roberto Martinez has to change it and actually push Bernardo out wide and then what that does for the side.
Yeah, look, their first game is against the Czech Republic and I will take us on to them because I tell you what, I don't fancy this lot very much. they had a weird old qualification campaign. To be fair, this is their eighth consecutive European Championship.
Yeah, they know how to do it. They've been here before.
They know how to get here, that's for sure. But even that wasn't enough to please people. The coach from that qualification campaign quit half hour after qualifying and basically said he was resigning because of the anger and aggression that had been shown towards him.
Wow.
So they now have a new coach, Ivan Hasek. I'm not sure if I pronounced that right, but he's only been in the jobs like 3 months. 3 months in charge of this team weren't that good in the first place. And he's trying to talk a good game, to be fair to him, coming into this tournament. I think he'll just be looking to try and get out of it, like with his reputation intact and be alive. Like I don't think he can afford to go for it. Look, they have actually got a couple of very good forward players, like Klosek and Schick.
Yeah, and Schick was out for the entire qualification campaign, which probably should be just, you know, brought up at the very least.
Yeah, and look, they are relieved that he is a fit now, that's for sure. Obviously been part of the Bayer Leverkusen story, so he's also got the feel-good factor about him and can try and spread some joy in this team. But they don't fill me with optimism, mate, I have to say. I mean, I'm not even going too deep into the analysis, to be honest with you, in terms of what I expect for them, because I really think it's going to be a case of like sitting in games, trying to see them out and making the most of your moments. And it's a really cliche thing to say, but I think somebody like Thomas Suchek is going to be absolutely essential to them, not just because he's like, well, he's the captain, but he's going to be the leader from the middle of the park. But also a lot of their moments will probably come from set pieces, from rehearsed moments in which he will look to capitalize and make the difference. So I think Suchek is probably the player man I'd pick out to be key in this team. But yeah, look, if they do get out of this group, they'll be straight out in the first round of the knockouts. And the fact that they have to start against Portugal just underlines what an uphill task they've got ahead of them.
Yeah, it's not easy by any stretch of the imagination, and it's not a particularly well-versed squad. There's some really good players in here, right? Like, there's obviously the Bayer Leverkusen trio, because Matej Kovar, who played most of the Europa League games, in fact, played all the Europa League games, is coming through in goal, although whether he starts ahead of Stanek, I'm not 100% sure. It basically now comes down to Schick and Hložek, right? And Hložek in particular hasn't got going since he left his own country, right? It's been a really tough time for him since leaving Sparta Prague. And he was so well respected and well like hyped as a youngster, and rightly so, because he was absolutely brilliant when he exploded onto the scene at Sparta. And he signed for Leverkusen. Since he left Prague, he scored 15 goals in over 100 games for club and country. And for someone who was so hotly tipped, and look, a lot of them have been sub appearances, I'm not necessarily knocking it, but for someone who's so hotly tipped, he really hasn't had a moment. And then you're kind of looking at it and being like, right, you're 21, there's still loads of time for you to get this back on track. But it feels like he's on the verge of leaving Leverkusen this summer. And perhaps the only thing that can maybe shift that is if him and Schick come together in this tournament and display something between them that allows the Czech Republic to perhaps go further than where they were expecting. And that's kind of where we're at, because I can't see loads of other reasons to be optimistic. Like you say, well-drilled set piece is fine. There's options for them there. And we know how good someone like Suchek is from those kind of situations. But I'm struggling to see where the goals come from. And after that qualification campaign, which admittedly was without Schick, but still really didn't set any hearts on fire, they just need something to start clicking. And I just can't see where it's coming from.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. I mean, it's going to be tough, but I don't know. We haven't talked about Georgia yet. Maybe they're worse.
They might be worse. They might actually be worse, yeah. The qualification campaign wasn't smooth by anyone's standard, but it did end with the golden ticket for Georgia, right? It's the playoff win on penalties over former champions Greece to book their spot at their first ever international tournament, which is great, right? Cool. History already been made. And it wasn't really to do with luck. The Georgian and FA have been on like a decade-long drive to promote the sport in the country and to promote young Georgian talent coming through, many of whom we've already seen in Europe. And they're managed by former French World Cup runner-up Willy Sagnol, who also won the Champions League during a 9-year spell at Bayern Munich and has had some interesting, I think, in terms of his appointments as assistant manager elsewhere. Ahead of this, he worked in the French youth setup. He worked at Bayern for a bit. He's insisting that his side are not going to Germany as tourists and that they fancy their chances of blooding a few noses given the group they've been drawn in. But qualification kind of told a different story. The playoff wins were impressive and they deserve their own credit, right? But Georgia are the only side to qualify for the tournament with a negative goal difference in qualification.
Wow.
They ended on -6 and finished fourth behind Spain, Scotland and Norway. Now, that campaign saw them use a 4-4-2. That was shifted to a 3-5-2 for the playoff series, which was obviously far more successful. So you imagine they'll be sticking with that in the tournament to give themselves a little bit more defensive solidity. And they do have some stardust, right? The name on everyone's lips is going to be Kvaradona. Kvicha Kvaratskhelia, who lit up Europe in 2022-23 with Napoli, and they rampaged the Serie A title, and he was maybe the best winger in the world. It was all very exciting. He did have a quieter year this year. Who didn't? Napoli. But he's still an electric footballer. And I do think that because international football has a slightly slower tempo than club football, his ability to beat his defender one-on-one time and time again should come into its own, and it will be a major attacking weapon for this Georgia side. He kind of plays up front in the two up top. He was their most prolific player in qualifying. Of course he was. He had 4 goals and an assist to his name. But I don't think he's the key, because I think the key is Georgia Mamardashvili, who is the goalkeeper, plays for Valencia. Now, he's someone that I tipped last summer who I thought was probably ready for a move to a top-level club. I stand by that. I think he's a really, really brilliant goalkeeper. I think he pretty much single-handedly kept Valencia up last season. And this season has been a really key part of how they've been able to turn it around and move up towards sort of challenging for a European spot. He's going to be really under the spotlight here. And everything I've seen from him in his career so far, I've really liked. He's a big, big, big unit. Valencia's number one, has been for a couple of years now, and he's really grown with that team. He's one of the best goalkeepers in La Liga. I thought last summer he was the player that Chelsea should have signed in goal. I really did think that that was the move for them. And I still think there'll be envious eyes on him here. I'm very comfortable saying that I think he has the potential to be one of the world's best goalkeepers. I think he's got absolutely everything. But keep an eye too on George Mikardadze at the other end of the pitch. He left Metz for Ajax last summer in a move that kind of went wrong for everyone. Relatively big money. He really struggled in the context of Ajax burning the bonfire on their own season very early on. He didn't really get any meaningful chances and he couldn't show his quality when he had sparing minutes on the pitch. But in January, he was loaned back to Metz and he immediately sparked back into life. He single-handedly at times led the charge to try and keep them in Ligue 1. He scored 11 times in 17 appearances when returning on loan in Ligue 1. It was ultimately unsuccessful. They lost the playoff to Saint-Étienne and Metz are going to be in Ligue 2 next year, but it hasn't gone unnoticed. Lyon and Monaco both already moved to sign him this summer. Nothing yet finalized on that front. So a good tournament here could see those options open up even further. Really fun player to watch. Makes things happen. Really dynamic and a good goal scorer as well. Up front with Kvara. I think those two have a chance of bloodying anyone's nose. But I am a bit concerned that kind of between goalkeeper and the bit up top, it's not much there. And I think they might struggle. But as we say, history's already been made.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to give him a chance. I'm going to put him third. Portugal first. Turkey second. Georgia third. Czech Republic, a dismal fourth.
I'd swap the bottom two, but yeah, I think we're in the right kind of... I'd love for them to deliver. I really would. But I do worry about that defensive record and seeing some of the spankings they took in qualification. I'm a little bit worried that there could be some teams about to run riot on this Georgia defense. And look, as good as Mamardashvili is, I think it will be hard.
Maybe I should target them in this fantasy game then.
Yes, I mean, look, Let's see. We shall see. But it's going to be interesting. That's a good place to remind everyone, though, that we are doing that fantasy league. If you didn't hear it at the start, the link is in the description. Please do come and join us. We're going to have some fun. There will be prizes available. So it's just going to be for people listening to the podcast. Make sure you get stuck in to the Ranks Fantasy League. We'd love to have you in there. And with that, we've come to the end of our series of Euro 2024 previews. We hope you've enjoyed these three episodes. 24 teams covered, a lot of ground covered. It's been a lot of fun, but all there's left for me to do, say thank you very much to my co-host, Mr. Dean Jones.
Cheers, mate.
I've been Jack Collins. This has been Ranks FC with the third of our three previews for Euro 2024. If you haven't listened to the other two, I would highly recommend that you go back and listen to them. We did groups A and B first, then C and D. Finished off here with E and F. Thank you so much for listening as ever. We really do appreciate your Rank Squad, and we will see you very shortly. Take it easy, gang. Peace.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. He's John LaFoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away!
Throw our last crunch berry!
No!
No one steals my crunch berries!
I think you mean my crunch berries. Choose your own crunch venture with Cap'n Crunch!
Hey parents! Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list: teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.